Case number 17-5128, Michael J. Dougherty et al. Versus Elaine H. Shearer in his individual capacity et al. Appellants. Mr. Walters for the appellants, Mr. Hawkins for the appellate.
May it please the court, Tice Walters for the defendants. Plaintiffs in this case seek money damages from two agency lawyers based on a recommendation that the FTC's commissioners initiate administrative proceedings. Plaintiffs' claims should be dismissed for two principal reasons. First, special factors preclude a Bivens remedy because the FTC Act is an alternative existing process for protecting the interest at stake. Second, plaintiffs' complaint not only fails to state a First Amendment claim, it does not satisfy even the basic pleading standards of Twombly and Iqbal. As an initial matter, a Bivens remedy is not available in this new context. The FTC Act provides a statutory mechanism to vindicate the constitutional rights at issue, a mechanism which plaintiffs themselves have invoked in their pending petition for review before the 11th Circuit. And it's worth noting that in denying or in holding that a Bivens remedy was available here, the district court relied almost exclusively on Justice Marshall's concurring opinion in Bush v. Lucas, which opined that a scheme could preclude a Bivens remedy only if it were specifically designed to provide full compensation. That is not the law. It was not the law then, and it is certainly not the law now in light of cases such as Schweiker v. Chalicki, this court's decisions in the Wilson case, in Spagnola, a host of others. Furthermore, even if a remedy were available, plaintiffs have not plausibly stated a First Amendment claim. There are no factual allegations supporting an inference of retaliation other than this three-day time period between one instance of criticism of the FTC's ongoing multi-year investigation and the date that plaintiffs learned that a enforcement recommendation had been made. That can't be enough to state a First Amendment claim, particularly when the criticism was of a multi-year investigation and where there's no specific allegations of animus or a change in behavior or anything else other than this temporal proximity.
I note that they don't even allege that anyone from the FTC was aware of what had been posted on the internet.
That is correct as to that trailer, Your Honor, that they say is the protected speech that caused the retaliation on which the district court relied as well. Yet another reason. They also failed to allege that the recommendation itself was made after the speech at issue, as opposed to having learned that the of the recommendation after the speech at issue. They haven't
meaning. Well, this is a pleading standard, so it would be a little bit difficult for them to have that information about what's going on internally to the FTC. They're, frankly, on information and belief, raising inferences, and they're, you know, employees or contractors or regulated entities are often in the situation of saying, we know event A happened and in sequence followed by event B, and the reason why that's, you know, enough to get us in the door for discovery is because there's a risk that if you draw inferences in their favor, that's what happened.
As to that very last point that I made, Your Honor, the failure to distinguish between the date they learned of the recommendation and the recommendation, that might be correct, although they don't even really say exactly that on information and belief that the recommendation itself occurred afterwards. But it certainly doesn't help them in any way on the core pleading failure, which is the fact that the only thing they are offering is this temporal proximity between one instance of criticism of an ongoing investigation and this recommendation. I do think it makes sense.
Here's the, I'm taking you off your flow of your thought, I'm sure, but has the litigation arising out of the administrative proceedings concluded at this point, or is there still pending in the 11th Circuit?
They're still pending, Your Honor. The case was argued quite a few months ago now, but the decision has not yet issued from the 11th Circuit. Mm-hmm. But again, in that pending proceeding, plaintiffs have raised a First Amendment argument have asked for a vacature of the commission's decision on that basis. And we think that that is more than enough under this court's precedent to preclude a Bivens remedy, and that it would make sense for this court to address that that issue here. If the court has no further questions, I'm happy to save the remainder of time for rebuttal. That would be more helpful.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Jim Hawkins here on behalf of the appellees Michael J. Daugherty and LabMD. Mr. Walters did not discuss qualified immunity. I'd like to make one comment about the position of the government here. It is deeply disturbing, this is in their briefs, of course, it is deeply disturbing that we have two attorneys employed by the federal government who are now telling this court in the brief that in 2013, the law was not clear enough for them to know that retaliation for protected speech was a violation of the First Amendment. They knew that, and they wanted to communicate to my client that they were going to retaliate. Reasonable inference from the complaint shows that Mr. Scheer wanted Mr. Daugherty and LabMD to know that criticism about the FTC and Mr. Scheer would not be tolerated.
Mr. Scheer. Your brief, you say, quoting your complaint, because your complaint says this, that the reason for the retaliation was either the trailer for the book or their failure to sign a consent order.
Or
their refusal to sign a consent order.
Right.
So even under kind of the theory of your complaint, the trailer for the book isn't a but-for cause.
It could be a but-for cause, Your Honor.
Not with that language. You said it's either one or the other.
Well, it would not have been a legitimate justification for the filing of the enforcement action just because Mr. Daugherty and LabMD refused to sign a consent decree.
Well, that wouldn't be violate the First Amendment, though.
No, but it's going to be for the jury to make the determination. There's so many facts at issue here.
But, I mean, you're pleading that there's an alternative explanation that is not unconstitutional.
Your Honor, I believe that's a question of fact for the jury to make that determination.
And you have not alleged in your complaint that anyone from the FTC was aware of this trailer, right?
No, Your Honor, but it is easy to reasonably infer, as the court must, draw reasonable inferences in favor of my client, that when Mr. Scheer, just 3 days after the promotional video was posted, at temporal proximity was just 3 days, told LabMD's attorneys that his staff had just recommended an enforcement action. Mr. Scheer was under no obligation to say that, and I'm sure today he wished he hadn't said that. But what he was doing was communicating quite clearly, Your Honors, quite clearly to LabMD that this criticism would not be tolerated. And if there's any question,
what happened 3 days after the 3 day span you gave, what happened at the end of those 3 days that you say happened in retaliation because of the publication?
Mr. Scheer told LabMD's attorneys that his staff had just recommended an enforcement action. 3.5 years.
So it's been going on for 3.5 years, and you're saying that it's a retaliatory action because the final phase of it came 3 days after the trailer.
We don't know whether
that's what we're supposed to believe.
Yes, Your Honor, because we don't know that the final phase would ever have come. Based upon the allegations in the complaint, the misrepresentations that Mr. Scheer and Ms. Yodakin made to the Federal Trade Commission, call into question whether there was ever an enforcement action to be filed.
So if there was, and I recognize that that's on appeal to the 11th Circuit, and that indeed there was preliminary relief granted by to your client in the 11th Circuit, is that right?
I'm sorry, what's the question?
The 11th Circuit recognized the plausibility of your client's claim on the merits.
Yes, Your Honor. They determined in the stay order that it looked to be an unreasonable interpretation and position by the FTC.
If the FTC nonetheless, and I know this is not your position and that you're litigating that in the 11th Circuit, but if the FTC did have grounds to investigate, then isn't it under the Supreme Court's decision in Reikley, doesn't that obviate any ability to bring a retaliation claim, or at least render it not clearly established that your client could proceed with a First Amendment retaliation claim?
Your Honor, this we're departing from the allegations in the complaint, I know, but looking at what the 11th Circuit, what is happening in the 11th Circuit, you need to understand what happened in the FTC administrative court. In the FTC administrative action, a whistleblower came forward and disclosed the fact that this file was never floating in cyberspace.
Right. No, I know. I've read the record, and I know that you've raised questions about this whistleblower and about the relationship between the whistleblower and the FTC, and you know that's all very much in litigation before the 11th Circuit. But I'm talking about a legal question for us in looking at the retaliation claim. If there were, and this, you know, from your perspective, take this as a hypothetical because I know you wanted to contest it.
Right.
But if there were grounds for an enforcement action on the part of the FTC, then under Reikley, doesn't that obviate or at least render not clearly established a First Amendment retaliatory enforcement claim?
And in Hartman versus Moore, Your Honor, this question was also addressed where the court actually reversed this circuit because the circuit had held previously that if, as long as there was a retaliatory motive, it didn't have to be the sole cause.
Didn't Hartman also say that for a First Amendment claim to lie, there had to be allegations of an absence of probable cause to support the underlying criminal charge in this case?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now, in this case, was the 1718 file available by peer-to-peer or not?
It was not available, Your Honor.
Not available by peer-to-peer?
It was under the allegations, to be fair, we've said that it was inadvertently available, but there is a lot of technology.
Inadvertently available is available, right?
No, Your Honor, it's like having something in your home.
Inadvertently available is not available?
It's only available if somebody comes to get it, and that's what Tversa did, and they hacked it. That's the only evidence that anybody ever actually took the file.
So, I didn't ask you whether they actually took it. I asked you whether it was available peer-to-peer. If somebody took it, it was available peer-to-peer, right?
It was available peer-to-peer.
It may have been inadvertent.
Yes.
But nonetheless, would not Hartman cut against you rather than for you? Since in Hartman, the question that we were reversed on rightly, I'm sure the Supreme Court was correct, was that there had to be a knowledge on the part of the agents, the AUSAs in that case, that there was no probable cause. Here there would have to be a knowledge that there was no evidence of a breach of the obligations under the relevant regulation of the privacy protections of the FTC.
I'm going to try and answer two questions at once because I don't believe I've answered.
I got that pretty complicated before I got through.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I don't think I've sufficiently answered Judge Pillard's question a moment ago. The complaint was brought based upon the allegation that there was spread. That would have been needed in order for that to have possibly been significant consumer harm, which is required under 15 U.S.C. 45N. If a tree falls in the woods and nobody hears it, it doesn't matter. And this is a quote from one of the judges on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals wondering why there was ever any prosecution here. Now, to answer Judge Pillard's question earlier, it's also important to know that after the evidence fell apart, was shredded, as Judge Choflat said in the 11th Circuit, the FTC changed its position. It was not their original position that simply being available was a violation of Section 5. That was a position that they came up with later, and frankly, is not supported at all in the case law because there has been no consumer injury. No matter what theory the FTC may have had about availability, in the absence of substantial consumer injury, they had no basis for bringing the case to begin with.
I want to go back to temporal proximity. Singletary, in all of the cases that it cites, Mitchell's, Cones, O'Neill, all involved instances where there was a letter from a lawyer or a letter from the plaintiff to a supervisor or the company or the city who employed the employee, or a notice of appeal was filed, or an EEO complaint was made. So there was a communication that was directed either to the defendant or the defendant's organization, or to the EEO office, that presumably the defendant could become aware that the complaint was made. Here, you're asking us to say that temporal proximity is sufficient where there's a posting on the internet, and we are to presume, I mean, retaliation doesn't work unless they know that this posting was on the internet. Retaliation doesn't work unless they know that a complaint was made, that the letter was filed, that the EEO claim was made. Why in the world should we stretch the temporal proximity precedent to say that as long as there's temporal proximity to any random thing that's posted on the internet, we can presume that temporal proximity, that's causation?
Your Honor, it is in the record in this case, and it is on the public record that the day of the publication of that video, 75 different users from the Federal Trade Commission looked at the website.
Where's that in your complaint?
That's not in the complaint, Your Honor, but the court can take judicial notice of that. And, Your Honor,
how can we we can take judicial notice of that? We're reviewing a motion to dismiss.
That's correct, Your Honor. You have the ability, as the trial court had the ability, to take public documents, to take judicial notice of public documents. If the court is concerned about the...
Doesn't that turn it into a motion for summary judgment? I mean, what's your... Yeah.
Not necessarily, Your Honor.
Was that request made below?
No, the court didn't look at that, Your Honor.
Did you ask the court to look at that
below? No, we did not.
Why should we look at it now?
The court has the ability to take judicial notice of public documents.
The court is reviewing a motion to dismiss?
In a motion to dismiss, Your Honor, yes. We cited cases to that effect in our brief. And in fact, the government cited, the FTC attorneys cited cases to that effect in their brief.
I mean, I would think at least your argument is that you look at a complaint in the light most favorable to the plaintiff and you draw plausible inferences therefrom without actually taking notice of who at the FTC may have looked at this video. It's an inference one can draw from what's pleaded in your
right.
favor, that some people did look at it given the time proximity. But I'm still troubled by what I see as a legal obstacle to your claim, which is that this was an investigation that had been going on for some years, and it may in the end have proved baseless. It may be in the end that in the 11th Circuit you win. But if the members of the FTC staff, however benighted their belief that this was public, you know, that this information had been, LabMD's information had been carelessly made public, they believed that and they had reason to go on and investigate and enforce based on that, you have no retaliation claim.
Your Honor, the allegations in the complaint are that the attorneys at issue knew that there had been no spread, knew that there had been no consumer harm, and misrepresented those facts to the FTC.
They indeed are still defending in the 11th Circuit based on an idea that a different modicum of harm or risk is sufficient from what you're arguing.
That did not occur until after the judge below, excuse me, Judge Chappelle, the administrative law judge, dismissed the claim against LabMD. That was a new argument that was raised. It was not at the beginning of their case.
Well, first they think there's harm because they actually have a different understanding of the facts. And then they're like, okay, maybe it looks like it was only Tversa that had been the one that had access to it. Still, this is a risk. These are people who are not, you know, preventing this kind of hacking of their files. And so their legal theory narrows, focuses, adapts as the facts develop, as yours does. But their view as they're going along is there's a reason to go after this company. And if that's the case, then I just haven't heard you deal with the precedents. You know, you have to say there's a clearly established right here. And we have this Reichle case that says, well, you know, if there's a enforcement action that's going on and there is a ground for it, even if it's unsuccessful, that vitiates a retaliation claim.
That is the correct holding of the case, Your Honor. But here, there's a serious question from the allegations in the complaint whether the FTC had any reason to bring this because the recommendations that were made by the attorneys at issue contained false and fraudulent information. Whether the FTC has a separate ground, independent of the retaliation, Your Honor, is of course a question, but it's a question that cannot be answered based upon this complaint, based upon the allegations that we have here, cannot be decided at this point in time by the court.
I agree, but I think that cuts against you. The fact that it can't be decided whether they have a separate ground, you know, they thought they had a ground, and
well,
they were
we
proceeding on that basis. And if they have that, then
we don't know that they know that they have a separate ground at the time the complaint was filed.
I'd say you're making the factual point that
as a factual matter, correct? Exactly. Did I answer Your Honor's question?
I think you did.
I think
you did. So, I mean, your position has to be not only that they lose, but that their position was frivolous.
It was frivolous.
And in bad faith.
And in bad faith. And relying upon an entity that hacked a file in violation of the HIPAA laws, and it was a crime for the company to even take the file in the first place. The FTC went after the wrong party. But those are issues to be decided, Your Honor, beyond the pleadings.
Thank you.
I know I'm way beyond my time. Any further questions?
I think we're
questions from the bench are like manna from heaven, please. Thank you.
Mr. Walters, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. We're of course happy to take any questions, but I thought it might be helpful just to discuss briefly why it is that the special factors analysis precludes Bivens' remedy here. And I think part of that is illustrated by the discussion that we've just been having about the merits of the 11th Circuit proceeding. That underscores both how strange it would be to have these simultaneous proceedings running.
The danger of an inconsistent resolution by the courts.
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. And of course, as those proceedings suggest, there is a remedy available. If, in fact, the proceedings were not supported and the LabMD did not, as it claims, violate the FTC Act, they can obtain vacature of the order, and that should be more than enough under precedent to preclude a Bivens remedy here.
Okay.
And would also, of course, obviate.
You're not abandoning the theory of qualified immunity.
No, Your Honor. And it is worth pointing out that plaintiffs would like to rest on the broad general proposition that government employees cannot retaliate based on speech. That's, of course, true. But the Reichle Court and this court in Ducore both made clear that that broad general proposition does not defeat a claim of qualified immunity. What you need is something more specific to the factual circumstances at hand. And plaintiffs still haven't come forward with a single case that is even remotely analogous to this recommendation of an administrative proceeding.
Okay.
Do they need a case, or isn't it enough that if they, and I'm not sure they've alleged this, but if they allege not only that the enforcement action is baseless, but that it's frivolous and in bad faith from the beginning, does that take it outside of Reichle and Ducour?
That would help with the probable cause issue if they had specific allegations that if taken as true, would show that there was a lack of probable cause. They'd still, I think, have to have something involving recommendation of an administrative proceeding. I mean, the cases they rely on are...
I'm not sure when you're in the realm of intentional misconduct. I mean, that's why, as you know, as a government attorney, the clearly established right feature of a qualified immunity doesn't really get you very far in cases that hinge on an invidious intent or malign intent, a retaliatory intent.
I do think that they would need something more than that, which is why the court in Ducouré said rejects the broad general proposition that retaliation on the basis of protected speech is sufficient to defeat a claim for qualified immunity. As Your Honor suggests, to hold otherwise would basically vitiate qualified immunity in this context. Again, it's not key to our case whether or not that is the ground that this court wants to discuss. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Charles.
Thank you. Case is submitted.